Barchester Towers by Anthony Trollope. In the latter days of July in the year 1855, a most important question was hourly asked in the cathedral city of Barchester. Who was to be the new bishop? Old Dr. Grantly, who had for many years filled that chair with meek authority, lay on his deathbed. It was pretty well understood that the mitre would descend on the head of Archdeacon Dr. Grantly, the old bishop's son. The Archdeacon had long managed the affairs of the diocese, and for some months previous to the demise of his father, rumour had confidently assigned to him the reversion of his father's honours. Bishop Grantly died as he had lived, peaceably, slowly, without pain, and without excitement. The old bishop slept during 20 of his last 24 hours, but during the short periods of his waking moments, he knew both his son and his dear old friend, the Reverend Septimus Harding, the Archdeacon's father-in-law, and would thank them tenderly for their care and love. "God bless you, my dears," said the bishop with feeble voice as he woke. "God bless you. May God bless you both, my dear children." And so he died.
"It's a great relief, Archdeacon," said Mr. Harding. "A great relief. Dear, good, excellent old man. Oh, that our last moments may be as innocent and as peaceful as his."
In subsequent days, the names of many divines were given in the papers as that of the bishop-elect. The Jupiter, that daily paper which, as we all know, is the only true source of infallibly correct information on all subjects, for a while was silent, but at last spoke out. The merits of all the candidates were discussed and somewhat irreverently disposed of, and then the Jupiter declared that Dr. Proudie was to be the man. Dr. Proudie was the man. Just a month after the demise of the late bishop, Dr. Proudie kissed the Queen's hand as his successor-elect. We must beg to be allowed to draw a curtain over the sorrows of the Archdeacon as he sat sombre and sad at heart in the study of his parsonage at Plumstead Episcopi. His hopes were not fated to be realised, and Dr. Proudie was consecrated Bishop of Barchester. The installation of Dr. Proudie was properly done, and nothing fit or becoming to a new bishop was omitted on the occasion. Dr. Proudie was not the man to allow anything to be omitted that might be becoming to his new dignity. He understood well the value of forms, and knew that the due observance of rank could not be maintained unless the exterior trappings belonging to it were held in proper esteem. He was a man born to move in high circles, at least as he thought himself, and the circumstances had certainly sustained him in this view. He was the nephew of an Irish baron by his mother's side, and his wife was the niece of a Scotch earl. He had for years held some clerical office appertaining to courtly matters, which had enabled him to live in London and to entrust his parish to his curate. His residence in the metropolis, rendered necessary by the duties thus entrusted to him, his high connections and the peculiar talents and nature of the man recommended him to persons in power, and Dr. Proudie became known as a useful and rising clergyman. In person, Dr. Proudie is a good-looking man, spruce and dapper, and very tidy. He has a large family, of whom the three eldest are daughters, now all grown up and fit for fashionable life, and he has a wife. It is not my intention to breathe a word against the character of Mrs. Proudie, but still I cannot think that, with all her virtues, she adds much to her husband's happiness. The truth is that in matters domestic she rules supreme over her titular lord, and rules with a rod of iron. Nor is this all. Things domestic Dr. Proudie might have abandoned to her, if not voluntarily, yet willingly. But Mrs. Proudie is not satisfied with such home dominion, and stretches her power over all his movements, and will not even abstain from things spiritual. In fact, the bishop is henpecked. One other marked peculiarity in the character of the bishop's wife must be mentioned. Though not averse to the society and manners of the world, she is, in her own way, a religious woman, and the form in which this tendency shows itself in her is by a strict observance of Sabbatarian rule. Woe betide the recreant housemaid who on Sunday is found to have been listening to the honey of her sweetheart in the Regent's Park instead of the soul-stirring evening discourse of Mr. Slope. For in such matters, Mrs. Proudie allows herself to be often guided by that eloquent preacher, the Reverend Obadiah Slope. And as Dr. Proudie is guided by his wife, it necessarily follows that the eminent man we have named has obtained a good deal of control over Dr. Proudie in matters concerning religion. Mr. Slope's only preferment has hitherto been that of reader and preacher in a London district church, and on the consecration of his friend, the new bishop, he readily gave this up to undertake the onerous but congenial duties of domestic chaplain to his lordship. As Mr. Slope sat himself down in the railway carriage, confronting the bishop and Mrs. Proudie as they started on their first journey to Barchester, he began to form in his own mind a plan for his future life. He knew well his patron's strong points, but he knew the weak ones as well. He understood correctly enough to what attempts the new bishop's high spirit would soar, and he rightly guessed that public life would better suit the great man's taste than the small details of diocesan duty. He, therefore, he, Mr. Slope, would, in effect, be Bishop of Barchester. Such was his resolve. And to give Mr. Slope his due, he had both courage and spirit to bear him out in his resolution. He knew that he should have a hard battle to fight, for the power and patronage of the see would be equally coveted by another great mind. Mrs. Proudie would also choose to be Bishop of Barchester. Mr. Slope, however, flattered himself that he could outmanoeuvre the lady. Such were his thoughts as he sat looking at the sleeping pair in the railway carriage, and Mr. Slope is not the man to trouble himself with such thoughts for nothing. Mr. Slope is tall and not ill-made. His feet and hands are large, but he has a broad chest and wide shoulders to carry off these excrescences, and on the whole, his figure is good. His countenance, however, is not specially prepossessing. His hair is lank and of a dull, pale, reddish hue. His face is nearly of the same colour as his hair, though perhaps a little redder. It is not unlike beef. Beef, however, one would say, of a bad quality. His forehead is capacious and high, but square and heavy, and unpleasantly shining. A cold, clammy perspiration always exudes from him. The small drops are ever to be seen standing on his brow, and his friendly grasp is unpleasant. Such is Mr. Slope. Such is the man who has suddenly fallen into the midst of Barchester Cathedral Close, and is destined there to assume the station which has heretofore been filled by the son of the late bishop. Despite his own disappointment, Dr. Grantly prepared to show respect to the station of the bishop, so he and Mr. Harding called together at the palace. Our friends found Dr. Proudie sitting on the old bishop's chair, and found, too, Mr. Slope standing on the hearthrug, persuasive and eager, just as the archdeacon used to stand. But on the sofa they also found Mrs. Proudie, an innovation for which a precedent might in vain be sought in all the annals of the Barchester bishopric.
"Do you reside in Barchester, Dr. Grantly?"
asked the lady with her sweetest smile when the introductions were made. Dr. Grantly explained that he lived in his own parish of Plumstead Episcopi, a few miles out of the city. Whereupon the lady hoped that the distance was not too great for country visiting, as she would be so glad to make the acquaintance of Mrs. Grantly. Mr. Slope asked,
"Are the arrangements with reference to the Sabbath-day schools generally pretty good in your archdeaconry?"
"Sabbath-day schools?" repeated the archdeacon with an affectation of surprise. "Upon my word, I can't tell. It depends mainly on the parson's wife and daughters. There is none at Plumstead." Mr. Slope merely opened his eyes wider and slightly shrugged his shoulders. He was not, however, prepared to give up his darling project.
"I fear there is a great deal of Sabbath travelling here," said he. "On looking at the Bradshaw, I see that there are three trains in and three out every Sabbath. Could nothing be done to induce the company to withdraw them? Don't you think, Dr. Grantly, that a little energy might diminish the evil?"
"I'm not being a director, I really can't say. But if you can withdraw the passengers, the company, I dare say, will withdraw the trains," said the doctor. "It's merely a question of dividends."
"But surely, Dr. Grantly," said the lady, "surely we should look at it differently. You and I, for instance, in our position. Surely we should do all that we can to control so grievous a sin. Don't you think so, Mr. Harding?"
And she turned to the precentor, who was sitting mute and unhappy. Mr. Harding thought that all porters and stokers, guards, brakesmen and pointsmen ought to have an opportunity of going to church, and he hoped that they all had.
"But surely, surely," continued Mrs. Proudie, "surely that is not enough. Surely that will not secure such an observance of the Sabbath as we are taught to conceive is not only expedient, but indispensable. Surely..."
Come what may, Dr. Grantly was not to be forced into a dissertation on a point of doctrine with Mrs. Proudie, nor yet with Mr. Slope. So without much ceremony he turned his back upon the sofa and began to hope that Dr. Proudie had found that the palace repairs had been such as to meet his wishes.
"Yes, yes," said his lordship.
Upon the whole, he thought so. Upon the whole, he didn't know that there was much ground for complaint. Mr. Slope remarked that the coping on the garden wall was in many places imperfect, and Mrs. Proudie had discovered a large hole, evidently the work of rats, in the servants' hall. Mr. Slope had, moreover, observed that the locks of the outhouses were very imperfect. He might specify the coal cellar and the woodhouse. Mrs. Proudie had also seen that those on the doors of the servants' bedrooms were in an equally bad condition. Indeed, the locks all through the house were old-fashioned and unserviceable. Mr. Slope was going on with his catalogue of grievances when he was somewhat loudly interrupted by the archdeacon, who succeeded in explaining that the diocesan architect, or rather his foreman, was the person to be addressed on such subjects, and that he, Dr. Grantly, had inquired as to the comfort of the palace, merely as a point of compliment. He was sorry, however, that so many things had been found amiss, and then he rose from his chair to escape. And so the archdeacon and the precentor took their departure, bowing low to the lady, shaking hands with the lord, and escaping from Mr. Slope in the best manner each could.
"Good heavens!" exclaimed the archdeacon, as he placed his foot on the gravel walk of the close,
and raising his hat with one hand, passed the other somewhat violently over his now grizzled locks.
"Good heavens!"
"I don't think I shall ever like that Mr. Slope," said Mr. Harding.
"Like him?"
roared the archdeacon, standing still for a moment to give more force to his voice.
"Like him?"
All the ravens of the close cawed their assent. Like Mr. Slope? Why, no. It was not very probable that any Barchester-bred living thing should like Mr. Slope.
"Nor Mrs. Proudie either," said Mr. Harding.
The archdeacon hereupon forgot himself for the very improper exclamation.
"The bishop seems to be a quiet man enough,"
suggested Mr. Harding.
"Idiot!"
exclaimed the doctor.
"Well, he did not seem very bright," said Mr. Harding, "and yet he has always had the reputation of a clever man. I suppose he's cautious and not inclined to express himself very freely?"